නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Dear Dhamma friends, last time actually we have completed Indriya Bhavana Sutta, and for that we discussed certain theoretical aspects mentioned in the Madhupindika Sutta, and I have selected another sutta which talks about mental proliferation, and that sutta is called Sakka Panya Sutta. So this sutta is available in the Digha Nikaya, the long discourses of the Buddha. But anyway, directly, immediately, we can't recognize that the Buddha talks about mental proliferation in this sutta. But in the core of the sutta, Buddha emphasizes how important it is and how it is causing various other detrimental aspects of one's life. So this sutta in a way has some aesthetic aspect as well, and therefore just to have a kind of a change to our ongoing discussion, I thought of touching those aspects as well without immediately going to those theoretical or technical stuff. Now on one occasion Buddha was living in Rajagaha, and there is a Brahmin village called Ambasand. So there he is actually staying in a cave called Indasala. So basically he is living in Rajagaha, and there is one village called Brahmasand, and there also he is dwelling at a cave called Indasala. So at that time Sakka, the god of the lords, or god of, sorry, lord of the gods, say there are different levels of heavenly realms are mentioned, and they are the Tavatinsa, the 33, the lord of the 33 gods is called Sakka, and there are a few other names also that we come across while we are going through the sutta. And there he got an idea to see the Buddha, and there he asked, where is Lord Buddha, from his companions, and they mentioned that at the moment Buddha resides at Indasala cave in Rajagaha. So then now what he did was he didn't immediately go to see the Buddha. Rather, he asked one of his attendants called Panchasikha to first of all have an appointment with the Buddha. Go and take an appointment from the Buddha to do a sort of a introduction that God Sakka is coming to see you, so please accommodate him. So likewise, kind of a cordial invitation, kind of an appointment through one of his attendant called Panchasikha. So it seems like the god Sakka related to the some higher levels, higher level god, and the Panchasikha is somewhat below, so it's called a Gandhab. So they are the musicians, dancers, and all that, the ones who are making some enjoyment to the higher level gods. So that seems that there are different levels of gods available among them. So different levels are available among even the gods. Anyway, so now the task is assigned to Panchasikha, and now Panchasikha is going to meet the Buddha. By the way, Panchasikha at that time is in love with one another goddess. And so we can see after coming there, once he had some cordial discussion with the Buddha, he talks about his fiancée. So that is also interesting here, because it seems like not only in the human realm, but there are some love affairs in the god realms as well. Now there are sort of interesting points mentioned here, that this Panchasikha, the person who is capable of playing a lute, and he was in love with another goddess called Thimbaru. And they are, anyway, unfortunately, she is somewhat assigned to another god, and now Panchasika was somewhat broken hearted. But he is honestly in love with this Surya Vachasa. Surya Vachasa is the fiance's name, and so with her. Now he is now talking and singing about various qualities of Surya Vachasa, and again he mixed that information with the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So he is actually talking, it's a very much like a song, and there he highlights his love towards Surya Vachasa, as well as he is talking about certain good qualities salient in the Buddha Dhamma and Sangha. So I'm not going to go through each and every verse here, because it is somewhat related to a love song. And then after he explained that song, or rather with his lute, and once he sang this song, so there's an interesting comment made by the Buddha. So he mentioned, Panchasika, the sound of your strings blends so well with your song, and your song with the strings, that neither prevails excessively over the other. Now that indicates that how carefully Buddha has listened to the song and the melody. So he found out that this Panchasika's singing is very much accordance with what he is playing. Now he is playing the lute, and at the same time he is singing, and it is very well mixed. The music and the vocal is properly mixed, properly matched, and they are not excess in any place. So they are in line, they are well synced. So that point Buddha highlights here. So that in a way shows certain aesthetic aspects of the Buddha, and on the other hand the skillfulness of Panchasika. And now he further explained, and he asked from Panchasika that when did you prepare or compose these verses? And then he mentioned that just before the Lord Buddha became enlightened, and while he was sitting at the Banyan tree, that is the Bodhi tree, so at that time he actually composed these songs. Now, in order to win this goddess called Surya Vachasa. Now, after mentioning this information, now Buddha and Panchasika is kind of in a cordial discussion, and that was recognized by the Sakka. Now, even though Sakka is still at the Thavatinsa realm, so he is actually very much like observing what Panchasika is doing. Now probably he might get upset why this guy is going and talking about his fiance to the Buddha. Anyway, he seems acknowledge what Panchasika is doing, and now he interrupts. God Sakka interrupts, and he sent a message to Panchasika. Now you have to put my appointment. You have come there for a task, to take an appointment for me. So please inform that I am going to come there. It's interesting in a way, because sometimes when we are sending a messenger, he goes there and he has a established relationship with the other party, and he forgets the message. So it's happened in the human realm very often. Now it has happened here also. Now Panchasika is now in discussion, dialogue with the Buddha, and he talks about the fiance and all these things. Now probably he might have forgotten for what purpose that he has come here. Now God Sakka, while being in the Thavatinsa, he reminds, just inform Buddha that I am going to come and meet him. Now immediately, yes, so this Panchasika inform the Buddha that God Sakka is going to come. Now after informing Then God Sakka come back, come to the Indasala cave. It doesn't take long time for them to appear from one place to the other place. So it is mentioned just like extending a flexed arm or bending a sorry. Yeah, extending a flexed arm or yeah, opposite. So they can quickly come to the any place where they are, where they want. So such quickly, so he appeared in the closer to the Indasala cave, and now he is standing and he is paying respect to the Buddha, and then actually Buddha address him with the name Venerable Kosiya. So Venerable Kosiya is the name used for Sakka to address there. Now Kosiya seems to be the original name of Sakka. Before he become the god Sakka, he was in the human realm and he has done various good deeds. And as a result of that, he was reborn in the Thavatinsa. And Buddha refers that original name, the Kosiya. Using that name, so Buddha address the god Sakka. And Buddha appreciate his visit. He mentioned that you have so many tasks. You are very busy while being in the Thavatinsa. So it is interesting that you found some time to meet me. Because Buddha is a spiritual teacher. Now God Sakka is entirely on the sensual realm. And he may have a lot of tasks in the devil realm. And now somehow he is interested in this spiritual enhancement as well. Now he find time to meet the Buddha. Now anyway, people like to go to the heaven, but it seems like heaven is also not extremely relaxed, it seems. So they also have various tasks. So they are also quite busy. Especially God Sakka is quite busy. So in his schedule, in his calendar, it seems like fully occupied. Somehow Buddha is appreciating that he is able to find out the time slot to meet the Buddha. Now after mentioning that, this God Sakka mentioned that it's another time also I put a message. Actually, I came to see you. So he remembers one of his previous visit to see the Buddha. And he mentioned that another occasion I came to see you, but unfortunately I couldn't meet you. At that time Buddha was on samapatti, on a meditation. So at that time, so I didn't want to disturb you. So what I did was, I have left a message to another woman. So that is also not a woman, actually it's another deity who is Vesavana's wife. Bunjati is the Vesavana. Vesavana is another deity, and that deity's wife was around, and the Sakka has left a message to her. So he actually asked when to see the Buddha, and then this lady has mentioned it is not the correct time. Now Buddha is in meditation, so therefore it is not an appropriate time to meet the Buddha. So at that time, God Sakka, what he did was, he mentioned then please go to the Buddha, and once he is available, please go to the Buddha and mention that God Sakka has arrived to see him and he is paying respect, venerating the Buddha. So likewise, please give my message, please give my veneration to the Buddha. So this is a kind of a task assigned to one goddess called or deity called Bunnaji. Bunjati. So now God Sakka reminds that. So I have left a message. Did you get that message? Bante, did you get that message? In a previous occasion also I came to visit you. Then Buddha recalls and mentions, yes, I got the message. And this deity Bunjati has given that message. And actually I came out from my meditation after hearing the sounds of your vehicle. Now, after this information, now Sakka mentioned that I actually understand that when the Buddha arises in the world, the realms of the gods increase. So their crowd actually increases. On the other hand, the realm of the asuras declines. So because the wholesome activities are increasing, many people are involved with the wholesome activities, and as a result of that, after the death, they are reborn in the heavenly realms. So the heavenly realms are crowded, getting increased because many are doing wholesome deeds. On the other hand, the unwholesome side is reducing, and therefore, kind of a decline is there on the hell realms. And therefore, that is a point that further God Sakka is mentioned here. And again, there's another interesting point that this God Sakka mentioned here. This is also quite interesting. There he mentioned there is one girl called Gopika who was in faith with the Buddha, and she was actually in the Kapilavastu. She's a Sakyan girl, but she's really faithful to the Buddha. One interesting feature she had was she didn't want to be a girl, a woman anymore. She was expecting to be a male. So that kind of a wish was there with her. And she rejected the status of a woman and developed the thought of becoming a man. And then what she did was she was continuing his morality practice, and she's so faithful to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and she maintained that determination as well, that her wish as well to become a man. And with the power of her determination as well as the wholesome power, and after passing away, she reborn in the Thavatinsa realm, that is the heavenly realm, as a god, as a male god, not a female, as a male god called Gopaka. Now, not just a god, he is the son of the gods. Now, everybody liked him, everybody considered him like a son, all the gods considered him like a son, and he's really, in a higher position. Now, this is something that God Sakka is explaining, how the people who are unfaithful to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and how they are getting that benefits. And he himself has understood the benefits through his own practical knowledge. And now he is pointing out what this particular incident. And then another incident happened, that there were three monks who were actually monks in the Buddha's Sasana, but they are quite careless, so they are not diligent in their practice. So what happened after their death? So they also born in a heavenly realm, but in a Gandharva realm, in a kind of a lower heavenly realm. As I mentioned, that Panchasika is in a Gandharva status, where they are the musicians, dancers, and they are in a kind of an inferior level of the gods. Now, similarly, these three monks, after passing away, since they didn't diligently practice, so they were careless and more into the sensual pleasures, they couldn't practice diligently. So after their passing away, they became musicians at the heavenly realm, and they have to now play music to those Gopaka and the other higher gods. So it's a kind of a shameful fact. So now this Gopaka is pointing out this point to these three gods, three Gandharvas. So he is actually, in a way, kind of hinting to them. So he mentioned that, "I am ashamed that you three are monks. You three actually had to dedicate your life for the teaching, to the practice. But you were not there, you are not doing that properly. Now see, you have come to the lower heavenly realm. See my situation. I was a man, I was a woman. I had a lot of faith towards the Buddha, and I didn't want to be a woman anymore. I want to be a man. And see how powerful this meritorious deeds. I became a Gopaka, the son of the gods. Now I am superior than you. It is shame that you have become kind of servants of ours." So So it's kind of a hint, kind of a criticism that he made to these three monks. And among these three monks, there were two actually quite ashamed by the talk of this Gopaka, and they immediately went away and they recollected Buddha's qualities and they were again practiced diligently. And quickly they were able to attain concentration, and with the proper practice they were quickly able to attain Maggapalayasre. Now they have reborn in a Brahma realm as a result of that. Because it seems like they were able to eradicate the defilements, which is not, now they have no desire to stay in the sensual realm, and they have become a non-returner, and as a result of that they reborn in a Brahma realms. Now the other monk, still he couldn't renunciate his sensual desires, and as a result of that he just remained in that lower realm. Now this is another interesting point that God Sakka pointing out to the Buddha. So this kind of an incident has happened. So it's a kind of a conversation, and then those information is actually included in this Sakkapanha Sutta, and this Gopaka, the discussion between the Gopaka and those three monks are also included. So I'm not going to in detail to each and every verse here. And after having explained that, then now God Sakka come into the point. Now he actually wants to ask several questions from the Buddha. So that is the whole purpose of his visit. And Buddha, and he mentioned that, Bhante, I have certain questions to clarify, certain questions to ask from you. Please kindly answer those questions. And Buddha understood, now this fellow is a really intelligent person. If I explain him all the Dhamma, he is quite capable to understand that Dhamma. So it would be very beneficial to him. So Buddha also agreed, yes, please ask your questions. I will answer those questions. Now, the questions that he asked actually has much relevance to our mental proliferation. So that is why actually I have selected this sutta. Now actually we are coming to the technical part of the sutta. Now he mentioned an interesting point. Sakka mentioned that whoever, the gods, asuras, gandambas, humans, actually everybody wants to be free from hate. They want to live harmoniously and without any hostilities. So they want to live in harmony. But unfortunately, there is no such harmonious living. People are quarreling, they are fighting, they are arguing, and all these sorts of issues are there. But as a whole, everybody wants to be free from hate. Everybody wants to live harmoniously. Everybody wants to be free from hostilities. So that was the kind of the main goal, but unfortunately it is not happening. What is the reason? So it is not only today, in the previous days also the same thing. It is not only common to the human realm, it is common to the God's realm or the heavenly realms as well. And to the Nagas, Asuras, to everywhere, this is kind of a common fact. People want to live harmoniously, people want to live free from hatred, but the opposite happens. What's the reason? And then Buddha mentioned, it is because of the bonds of jealousy and avarice. That is the reason that all these issues are coming to the being. So there is jealousy, there is avarice. So as a result of that, constantly these arguments, quarrels, hatred, and those kinds of unwholesome qualities are prevailed in the human realms, in the heavenly realms, in the asuras, nagas, everywhere. So the immediate reason Buddha shows here is jealousy and avarice. And then, after getting that answer, Godsaka was quite happy, and probably he too have reflected about this problem before, or the question before, and he was quite happy about the Buddha's answer. Now he asked another question. Then Bhante, what is the reason for this jealousy and avarice? So that is the next question Godsaka is asking. And then Buddha mentioned it comes because of like and dislike. So people have their own likes and dislikes. As a result of that, jealousy and avarice is going to arise. Say for example, you want to have something, but you are not capable of having it. Assume that you are not in a very good financial status. Therefore, you can't acquire a very good car, for example. It's a very kind of a best car, but you can't afford it. But you have seen someone else, maybe your neighbor, is capable of having that car. Now what you do, you become jealous of that neighbor. Now if we understand the root, the main cause, it has become some sort of a desire in your mind. You couldn't fulfill that desire. And when you see someone who was able to fulfill that desire, and you become jealous of that person. So you can see there was like, there was dislike in the mind. So those are certain inherent qualities in the mind. And you, when those are prevalent in the mind, so it causes jealousy and avarice. And you want to protect your things, and then the miserliness and all these other parts also come into the picture. And here, after mentioning that, Buddha mentioned, sorry, the Godsaka asked another question, as actually I explained. Now he asks, what's the cause for like and dislike? So then Buddha mentioned that is the desire. So desire is the one causing like and dislike. And then after that question, then Godsaka asks, what is the cause for desire? Then Buddha giving an interesting answer, he says, because of thinking the desires are arising. Then we are coming to the most important part of this sutta. Actually, I can't say the most important part, one of the important points that relevant to our discussion. When Godsaka asks how thinking arises, now then Buddha mention arises from the tendency to proliferation. So this is an interesting point mentioned here in this sutta. So because of the tendency to proliferation, then the thinking happens. Now if we go back, now this seems to be the, in according to this sutta, this seems to be the root cause, that is the tendency to proliferation available in one's mind. It may be the celestial beings, it may be the nagas, asuras, humans, whoever. So they all have the tendency to proliferate. So when they have such tendency to proliferate, they start to think. And as a result of that, the desires are arising. As a result of that, like and dislike going to arise. As a result of that, jealousy and avarice going to arise. And it's a kind of a bond. And as a result of that, all the harming, hate, hostilities and all these arguments, quarrels going to arise. Now here we can find out an interesting situation, because now we learned from our previous session that mental proliferation is another aspect which is coming to being based on the our sensual activities. And here Buddha talks about another aspect of this mental proliferation being a root cause for further thinking and going on to the various other issues. It seems like kind of a contradiction. Now, if I refer Madhupindika Sutta, now this is what mentioned there. Now, in the Madhupindika Sutta, the flow goes like this. Because of eye and forms, when they come together, then the eye consciousness arises. And when these three are occurring together, they manifest again and again. So the kind of a accumulation is there, kind of a presence is there of the all three phenomena. And as a result of that, the contact arises, the passa contact arises. And it causes feelings. So whoever undergo kind of contact, so now he starts to feel. Feelings arise. And once feelings are there, now he starts to perceive. Now he wants to recognize more and more information. Now the perceptions are arising. Yang vedeti tang sanjanati. So the feelings he perceives now. So after, in order to perceive further, he now starts to think. He is connecting to the past, he is connecting to the future, and all sorts of perceptions are coming to the picture as a result of that. And this thinking, when it is happening in various directions, related to the past, related to the future, related to various other sense organs, etc., now it produces mental proliferation. Now this is the order that we can recognize according to the Madhupindika Sutta. Now according to the Sakkapancha Sutta, we have another order. Now here Buddha mentioned that people have the tendency to proliferate. Papancha Sanya Sankha, the same wordings. People have the tendency to proliferate. That causes vitakka, the thinking, and it causes desires, and desires cause like and dislike, and it causes jealousy and avarice, and it causes hate, harming one another, hostilities and malignment, all these issues are there. Now, from the kind of outside look on the onset, it seems like these two theories are contradicting. But if we see clearly, so it is not contradicting. So this is a very, very interesting technical point is here. So why mental proliferation caused to all these issues, which is undergoing vitakka, chanda, piya appiya, like and dislike, issa macchariya, so this jealousy and avarice, miserliness, all these, and then it caused to this. Actually, understanding hate, harming one another, hostilities and all, that they happened because of jealousy and miserliness, so that can be actually understood. And again, we can understand, okay, people have their own likes and dislikes, so that is causing this jealousy and avarice, so that also can be understood. And people have their desires, that causes like and dislike, that also can be understood. And maybe desires are aggravated because of thinking, that also can be understood. Then how we understand this point? Tendency to proliferate, so papancha sanya sankha causing vitakka, it is very much like the opposite here. Now the vitakka generates prapancha, the thinking generates mental proliferation. Now here, mental proliferation generates thinking. Now we can see kind of a vicious cycle here. So when, according to Madhupindika Sutta, so when they start to think, it generates mental proliferation. Now it is going on and on. Now when mental proliferation takes upper hand, it generates further thinking. So that is what highlighted here. So this vitakka and papancha have kind of a interrelationship. They are having kind of mutual relationship. When one thinks, it has a potential to generate more proliferation. And when proliferation happens, it causes too much thinking. Now proliferation takes upper hand. Now it sort of generates more thinking. Now it has kind of a mutual relationship between these two. And on the other hand, there's another point that we can understand here. That is, so what are the things available in the world? What are we see through our eyes? What are the things that we hear through our ears? What are the things that we recognize, cognize through our nose? And what we taste through our tongue, what we go through our senses, our body, touching sensations. And if we consider the outside objects, so we can say they are kind of products of mental proliferation. Say for example, if you consider a car. So car is a product of mental proliferation. So people have thought about it, people sort of design it, many people get together, they put their own different ideas to it, they put together and have their different views about it, and ultimately they come up with a product. So this product is not a very primordial thing, but it's a very complex outcome. So it's an outcome that very outcome represents a huge amount of mental proliferation. So when you see that product, it is not a very fundamental, very primary kind of a characteristic, but rather it's a huge complex entity. So that huge complex entity represents kind of a result of papancha. And once you see that, immediately it generates thinking, because it is a product of thinking. So many people were involved in too much thinking and they are coming up with this product. So it actually takes another person who look at that product also to think. And when he thinks, there are desires arising in his mind. Now he want to buy that car. Now he want to possess that car. Now he don't have enough money to possess that car, to buy that car. Now he see someone, he want to own that car. He has now generated a like in him. So there's a like towards that car. But unfortunately, he is not possible to purchase it. Can't afford it. Now he see another person driving the car. Suppose his neighbor or his companion. Now he is having that car, which is this person also likes it, but he can't afford it. Now what happened? Jealousy and avarice is going to arise. Suppose now this person, even though he is jealous, now he can't stop that jealousy. Now probably he put a hint. He make an argument. He sort of condemns. He get into some kind of an argument with that particular person who already possessed that car. Now going to have an hatred and arguments, harming one another, all sorts of issues are now going to arise. Now we can see a very interesting relationship in this Sakkapancha Sutta, how many issues are going to arise because people have this tendency to proliferate. And what they see also kind of products of mental proliferation. And as a result of that, we are somewhat entangled, trapped in a real huge vicious cycle. From here, Buddha mentioned that all these genesis is there for the mental proliferation. And in this sutta, Buddha mentioned that what we see, hear, smell, taste, touch are products of mental proliferation. And as a result of that, it generates further thinking, further desires, further likes and dislikes, jealousy, miserliness, and that actually leads to many issues. So this is what actually I like to share with you today, and we can further discuss on this Sakkapancha Sutta, how Buddha is going to address this issue, and we'll discuss that in the future. And with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. There are many things to ponder here, therefore I like to have a discussion with you related to today's Dhamma sermon, or if you have any question or if you have anything to add, So you can raise your hand and put the question.
So if we have any new friends joining us for the first time, like Bhante said, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can also send them to me anonymously via chat. Bhante, I think we're probably going to get to this later on, but given most of us probably work very busy jobs and mental proliferation is a part of the requirement to do those jobs. Is there anything we could do during our working days to continue the practice?
Yeah, so actually, I can't agree with you telling that mental proliferation is a requirement. Because mental proliferation is something that we all have, that it's a kind of a tendency we all have, but it is not a requirement. So that is where the practice is quite helpful. So the practice shows us how unnecessarily we get on to too much thinking. And ultimately, we become victimized to that very thinking. So that is where we are kind of becoming a slave to mental proliferation. So mental proliferation part, slowly we have to overcome, we have to reduce. And as I mentioned in the previous times, so when it is necessary, we can think. That thinking also happens under our purview, under our supervillance. Now that is possible. Now say you are thinking about the future. Suppose you are given a task to design something. Now you need to recognize what are the other designs available, what are the say future prospects available, and what are the models available, different competitive brands available. So likewise, there may be various aspects that you have to look into. Definitely this involves a fair amount of thinking. But you are thinking properly. You are thinking methodically. So your thinking didn't overpower yourself. So you can make use of thinking. Thinking is an extremely valuable skill we all human beings have. So we can use the power of thinking. But we are not allowing thinking to overpower ourselves. So under our control, we do the thinking. So in other terms, what I am trying to tell is you are mindful while you are thinking. It is not that you completely lost your mindfulness. So you are very well mindful that at the moment I am planning something. I am thinking about the future. I am thinking about a particular aspect. I am thinking about a competitive product, whatever it is. So likewise, you are so the thinking process happen under the supervision of your mindfulness. And suppose if it is taking overpower, now you have to apply brakes. That indicates that you are reducing or you have lost your mindfulness and the thinking is overpowering you. So that is what we need to avoid. Now, in order to do that, we have to have a fair amount of mindfulness, and mindfulness is in the front end. So it is always in the upper, taking the upper hand. So that is why Buddha mentioned Satadhipateya Sabbe Dhamma. Among all the various qualities, among all the various phenomena, mindfulness is the best, or mindfulness is the chief. So if we are giving that position, if you are giving that respect to the mindfulness, so mindfulness can somewhat supervise the mind. So under its supervision, thinking is going on. We are making use of our thinking. That is a skill, as I mentioned. Now, while that thinking going on, you supervise the mind. Okay, now this guy is thinking about this. Now this guy is thinking about this. Now this fellow is thinking about this. Doesn't matter. It still happens under my control. So it is not gone to the level of you being a victim of that very thinking. So therefore, on the other hand, suppose now you come across various different designs, different aspects, and you have analyzed all the possibilities, and now you want to stop this planning part. Now you want to accumulate all this information and to put into a schedule, put into a diagram, put into a kind of an analysis. Now you are doing that task. Now you can do that. Suppose you completed that. And now you want to present. Now you are making a presentation. Now you are doing that. Suppose you have completed that. Now you want to stop. Are you able to stop your mind now? So these are in a way quite interesting and practical aspects how we can use our practice. Because once you have completed the task totally, assume that now you simply have to present it to the audience, to your colleagues, to your say management, whoever it is. Now you simply have to present it. Now till that, can't you keep your mind quiet? Because the time has not come to present it. Suppose it is on tomorrow, but now you are ready. Can you keep your mind quiet? Because now you are not designing. Your design has completed now and you are confident. It is done well and you spend a fair amount of time and you did a nice job. And now you want to stop thinking. So at this time, again we are thinking, again we are mentally proliferate. So that indicates our lack of mindfulness, our weaknesses in our practice. So therefore, Buddha doesn't say that we should not think. Rather, he say, when it is necessary, when it is beneficial, one can think. And when it is not necessary, and when it is unnecessary, when it is not essential, you can keep your mind quiet. So that is the point we want to understand. So therefore, mental proliferation is not a must. And it is a kind of a weakness that we all have. And the tendency in ourselves is to proliferate. So that we have to admit that all the beings, not only human beings, even the celestial beings, have that tendency. So we are fond of thinking. We are fond of mental proliferation. So that we have to understand as to recognize as a weakness we all have. And we have to apply our practice to overcome that weakness. So I think if we are practicing Vipassana particularly, so we have to experience a reduction of mental proliferation, then only we can see we are in the proper path.
Thank you for making that distinction between thinking and mental proliferation. So Bhante, is it true to say that thinking is not necessarily a bad thing or a departure from our practice as long as it is done mindfully?
Yeah, I can agree with you. So we are doing mindfully and we are doing it for purpose. We know the benefit of thinking at the moment. As I mentioned, as an example, if there is a purpose, if there is a benefit of thinking, so probably you can make use of it. But if there is no purpose, it is not useful, and you want to keep your mind quiet, then it is no point of thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's not so clear whether our thinking is actually beneficial or not. So I guess that is part of the wisdom part of the Vipassana,
yes,
mindful.
Yes, actually that is true. Because our mind has another tendency called restlessness and again regrets. So those are the hindrances, uddaccha kukkuccha. So that actually cannot eliminate immediately. Uddaccha kukkuccha only eliminated after becoming an arahant. So you can see how interwoven these hindrances are. So they have become some sort of characteristics of the mind. So the restlessness and the regretting about what has happened, regretting about that you couldn't do something good. So those regrets, repentance and all these things are very much like human nature. And we have to understand that. And again, by that understanding we can overcome them gradually, and we will be successful only after we become an arahant. So till that, we have to, I mean, there to some extent, we have to sort of have some self-compassion that mind is involving in this useless kind of thinking sometimes. It is jumping here and there, restlessness is there. So likewise, we have to admit that certain shortcomings are still available. Even though I am practicing well, still there are many shortcomings available. So, but I am working on it. I am not completely defeated. Rather, the practice is helping. Say, for example, say a month ago, say you were in a one level. So assume that you were thinking too long and too much. But now today, if you compare to your previous state, you probably might recognize some sort of an improvement, kind of a controllability or kind of a restraint in your mind. So even though thinking happens, it is not too close or too gross. So it may mean it has become at least subtle, not much bothering. But previously, they have come to the very surface of the mind, where they are very much like intruded to the mind. So you are completely under control of that thinking, and you are becoming a complete victim of that thinking. But now, as a result of practice, it's very much like the thinking is there, but it is still available in the background. That does not disturb your sort of main activity of the mind. So likewise, it's a kind of a gradual improvement happens, and we have to slowly address the issue.
I'd like to invite Patricia, please ask the next question. I like to, ask, this is not kind of a question, but you know how we going through the process at the moment. This is related to the explanation we have done today. Now, if you look at like, now we keep on trying our best to, you know, be mindful, we practice, do our daily practice. And so we sometimes hear or sometimes listen to the news, and then we get the eye contacting with some kind of a form, probably say, because we are moving away from the...
Yeah, Mahesha, can I disturb you for a moment? I have to close the windows, I am experiencing some rain, give me a minute, huh?
What I'm saying was, because we live away from where we were born and where we grew up, so when we hear the news about, you know, especially about something bad, there we go, we get the attachment, okay, this is happening in Sri Lanka, and we contact that with our, you know, hearing sense, and then we start, you know, the contact lead us to feel. So feeling is these days like to get, you know, feel like, because of the attachment, you feel like, oh, it's dukkha, you know, people are suffering, things like that, than usual times. And then at that point, if we can break that chain of going through the perception of, you know, perceiving it, whether it's sorrow or happiness or something like that, if we can think about at that point of feeling, I'm looking at the diagram that you showed actually talking, so then we can be, okay, that is it, why I felt like that, because I attached to, though I'm physically away from the country, but still I attached to it, and looking at the people, but taking on the other hand, not only in Sri Lanka, but there are other developing countries and also developed countries who people are suffering, but we such don't feel it as such. We hear the news, but we don't feel it as such, because the attachment to the other countries and to Sri Lanka is different. We have taken it differently to ourselves. So that's the difference. And if we can then be mindful and think, okay, this is it. So that's why it's happening, and that's what the Buddha said, that it's, if you take everything into account, if you look at it in a correct way, or what you say, the natural way, that it's dukkha. Although we turn it as, yes, that's good, that's happiness, and there's nothing called happiness as such. So if we can make up our mind, so that breaking point, as you explained a while ago, is the being mindful. So if once when we get the mindfulness, the way that I'm looking at it is we have to do a U-turn. So they go backwards. Okay, where the contact happens. So I felt it. That's why. So feeling and then backwards, going backwards, where the contact happens. Okay, this is the place the contact happened. I heard it there from the television news or whatever news. And then can go to again to the place that's nothing. So is that a good way to look at it? Or just in that place of feeling, you break it, be mindful and think, okay, yes, it's happening. That's it. I don't have to relive a story over it and move forward to the next stage of thinking and then doing mental proliferation. So that's what I was thinking, because the degree of attachment makes you feel and then move on with the rest of the story and then doing bad to you. But if you can understand in a particular point and break that chain, probably you can either go take a U-turn and go backward, or you can then just stop it from there. I know it's a lot of practice is needed, but that's the how I understood. Is that correct?
Correct. Actually, you are correct. So that is what mentioned here in the as what we discussed today. So we have this like and dislike. So like and dislike is there. So it has become sort of internal property in our mind. So as you said, so you have kind of a like towards your country. So we all have that. And to another country, you don't have that much of a like, that kind of a respect, say, you can say. So there's a kind of an inclination towards your country. There's a kind of a inherent sort of even gratitude or maybe inclination, attachment. So those are there when it comes to a particular country, to your own parents, to your own children. So these are the sort of accepted things. But on the other hand, when we see another country, when we see another person, when we see another neighbor, so we don't have that much of an attachment towards them. So as a result of that, we are not getting to any trouble. So the ones we are too closely holding, the ones we are too much attached, is the one causing us more trouble. So as you said, so when the Sri Lanka is going through some kind of a trouble, you feel it. But suppose India is now going through some trouble, you are not feeling it that much. But everywhere is human beings, but we can't see that picture. But we have a special attachment to our own country. And as a result of that, when that particular country people is suffering and they're going through some sort of decline or whatever it is, then we are also going to suffer. So I can accept what you are telling, and it is well explained in the sutta as well. So actually, we are to address. So we have to admit that these likes and dislikes what we have. So in other terms, what we can understand is that certain tendencies in all we have. So I have a kind of a tendency towards this person. When I am talking with this particular person, I have kind of a tendency to get angry. When I am talking with this particular person, I have a tendency to have some sort of a compassion. When I am talking with this person, I have a tendency to get a side of a jealousy in my mind. When I am talking with this particular person, I have a kind of a loving friendliness toward this person when I am talking. So likewise, even when we are talking with different people, so it is not the same kind of a mentality we have. So depending on our previous experiences with that person and depending on our preconceived ideas, various perceptions, as a result of that, we are in a way projecting a different picture to the situation. So if we can understand that honestly, if we can understand that clearly, so right, what is the added part? What is the constructed part? So what is the sort of introduced part? So there is a kind of a conversation going on about a kind of a present phenomena, but I am unnecessarily adding my previous experiencing with this person to this picture. So these are in a way some interesting points that we can recognize, those actually helpful to understand our own weaknesses, our own biased attitudes. And they are the ones actually not making us to get correct decisions. Because whenever we are taking decisions, those likes and dislikes really matters. Those likes and dislikes come and color the picture. As a result of that, we can't take the correct decision. Our decision is fairly biased. But on the other hand, if we can honestly understand our certain tendencies in ourselves, our certain biases operating in the mind, then we are careful. At least we can step back. We can have mindfulness and look at the picture more broadly in an unbiased way. Then we are in a better position to have a correct decision. So likewise, we can explain this in many different ways. It's a very rich area to discuss. So I hope that I answered your question.
Yes, Mantej. So in other case that what I felt was, we take things like my self concept.
Yes.
That is the other thing. So it's my country, something like that. So that's why that the clinginess and all those things come. So my people are suffering, my country is suffering, things like that. Actually, in taking into account as per the Buddha's teachings, actually birth is a first suffering. It's starting from there. Then everything is suffering. So we don't see it in that angle, because the way that we were taught when we were small, everything is like positive concept. Everything comes up. Okay, that's good. That's good. That's good. So we looking forward for good, good, and good. But actually, we are running behind dukkha all the time. We don't feel it as dukkha. So even hunger is a dukkha, and we didn't feel it. We love when we see food like nicely decorated with all those fruits and nuts. Like, oh, that's yummy, and I like it, I want it. And once you eat it, you feel like it's very discomfort because it's too much of sugar and oil and all those things. But the way that we were taught, and the way that the world is rolling around, it's always giving the wrong concept. We digest that concept. So it's very hard to unwind it. So we are wind with certain, in a machine is wind with, a spring, so like that. We are wind with those things, and it's very, very hard way that we have to unwind it, at least starting now. It's a huge challenge that I felt like, when we meditate, when we listen to a Dhamma talk, we take it to mind, okay, hereafter I will think like this. And I'm not going to think like the other rest of the people, who are just running behind the, all those physical things. But when come to again to the zero, it's really hard. It's really, really hard. That's what I felt. Thanks, Mante.
Yeah. Actually, I agree with you. So that is where Buddha mentioned that in the Jata Sutta, how one can unentangle this entanglement. So directly ask the same question. So there are various entanglements available in this world. So it may be generated internally, it may be generated externally. And how one can unentangle these entanglements. So this is an interesting question. So how much we internally produce a lot of suffering. So how we are creating a self. How we are unnecessarily put our hand sometimes. How we are too much thinking. How we are sort of adding our own preconceived ideas to the picture. That also makes a lot of suffering. So likewise, there are many attributes that we have to recognize, and each and every part we have to address carefully, and we can't do it in a rush as well. So that is also an interesting point. So even though we understand it, as you correctly mentioned, you can't immediately answer. So you understand, okay, this is the issue, this is the shortcoming, I have kind of a tendency. But it doesn't eliminate immediately. So you have to again and again look at it. Again and again you have to understand it. Again and again you have to understand the disadvantages of that kind of a thinking. And slowly only it may become weaker and weaker. So it's a very careful process that we have to undergo So just by in a rush, just because of just using mere determination, one can't do it. Determination also necessary, and continuous practice also quite necessary. And on top of that, kind of a ongoing mindfulness, and always being mindful. And mindfulness appear like a kind of a protector to the mind. So always present, and it's giving the proper perspective about the situation. And accordingly, we take the correct decision. Yeah, thank you.
Yes, Mante, it's the mindfulness is like a shield. That's what I felt like. In
yes.
any case, in any scenario, if you bring your mindfulness, it's as a shield, so you'll be getting protected.
Yes.
And other people might be, you know, relating all those stories. So often, actually, I hear, like, people known to me, I'm dying in Sri Lanka, like, you know, my friends, something like that. So they ring and tell them, you know, they cry. I was just thinking, oh, can I cry too? But, you know, understand the reality, okay, this is it, or no, that person will die in one day. Or maybe it's death is a bit sooner because of this kind of pandemic. But I have to show that I'm sad also, you know, then I have to act. And say, okay, yeah, this and that. So jump into that person is, you know, swimming in a sadness pool. And I can't actually stay on the bank and, you know, just have a look and watch that person is, you know, drowning. So has to either jump and drown or take the person out. They can't take the person out because it's in a huge sorrow. But then have to act and show, okay, I'm so sad that you're, you know, jumping in a, you know, sad pool and then try to drown. But, you know, it's really helpless to, you know, just to say to people, oh, come on, think about this. This is the reality. So very hard to, you know, get people to be mindful. But, you know, I look at my mind and think, okay, this is it. So I learned this and I understand this. This is it. And, I mean, next day it can be me. I mean, whoever. And so I thought, you know, now we have to act. So we have to act the rest of the life in front of other people because, you know, it's hard to lead those people as well when they come and say you, there are sorrows. We have to listen. So listening and then saying yes, yes, yes. And that's it. Can't help anymore. Just say yes. So it's like a drama of, you know, acting now. That's kind of... I was confused before, but I think now I'm getting comfortable with that acting part as well. Is that the right way, Mante?
Because in a way, I mean, one aspect of the practice is to have empathy that when someone is going through some suffering, so we also feel it. It doesn't mean that we are becoming somewhat, say, astonished or having some senseless insensitivity or something like that. Rather, we also sensitive. We also feel they are suffering. We also have the same kind of situation. And as you mentioned, the next victim could be myself. And so likewise, we can put ourselves onto their situation. So likewise, we can understand. So actually, the person, when they are telling us, when they are sort of crying in front of us, so that very crying, that very expression helps them to recover. Because that is also one important thing. Because if they are holding all these grievances and all these suffering to themselves, then they are utterly helpless. But we are kind of a medium at that time, so I am simply listening. It doesn't mean that I am going to sort of save him or to resurrect the dead person. It is not. But I am simply a mindful listener at that time. So that really helps. Because I am showing my empathy towards that person. And that person also feel comfortable being with me and talking to me. And so he is crying. Doesn't matter. He is crying and again telling, again and crying, again and telling. So I have to be sort of sympathetic at that situation because that really helps him. If he is not crying and if he is not expressing all his views, then it is actually accumulated in his heart. So that can become a cancer. That can become real tragic to him. So rather than keeping all those emotions in his mind, he's now expressing them out, and that is quite helpful. So we don't need to do much, but simple time, giving some time for him, giving some, sharing their thoughts, and that also really helps. Yeah.
Yes, Bhante,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I agree to you.
Yes. So we can go to the next part, next person.
Okay, I'd like to invite Don to please ask the next question.
Thank you. Hi, Bhante.
Yes.
When I was listening to the today's sutta, I felt it like it's a kind of a continuation of Madhupindika Sutta, in the sense like in the Madhupindika Sutta we saw continuous thinking and the proliferation can kind of take over the person, override the person. Now today's sutta explained what happened after that. Like,
yes.
Okay. Then. And so that was like a very nice continuation. So Bhante, does that mean even for this, what happened, like according to teaching today, even for that, the same answer as for the Madhupindika Sutta, in the sense where at the time of contact, we try to see the non-value or non-attachment side of it? Is that still the answer to today's?
No. So there's a very interesting answer Buddha gives in this sutta. That's what I want to share maybe on next week. Because that is another interesting practice that Buddha recommends to God Sakka. And so that is we'll explore on next week. And that is really interesting answer Buddha giving. And it looks at our practice in a different angle. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll wait for next week.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Bhante, for the next question, I'm just going to read the message that I received.
Yeah.
Sometimes proliferation, to be fruitful, it has to happen effortlessly. Effortlessly meaning not mindfully. That's a question. And then just allow thinking. I have gained a lot on mental proliferation while knowingly one certain aspect. I assign this to talent for imagination. This is creativity, isn't it? The car manufacturer is definitely for mental proliferation. Otherwise, how can he come up with such a good product? I feel students have to have this. Otherwise, it will be a stereotype set of breed.
Yeah, interesting question. So now, the point is that, I can accept that mental proliferation, we can interpret as our creativity, our imagination, and all sorts of names that we can give. Actually, we can give prizes, and we are giving all these medals and all these things. Now, say for example, you see someone, and now you start to think, and you are writing a poem, and you are writing a story, you are writing a novel, and you are directing a film. So all sort of things are there. So people are doing all these things and they call it creativity, and they give a lot of awards to all this, and that is the typical norm. We can accept it. But on the other hand, don't you think that the creativity comes from a silent mind? So this is another aspect that we didn't think too much. Actually, we always think that the creativity comes by thinking. So we have to think again and again, and that thinking produces creativity. So that is the typical accepted norm. But on the other hand, there is kind of a potential in our mind. It may be kind of incorporated with our intuition, not with too much thinking. So with the practice, it is not that we are going to become sort of blunt people. Rather, creativity is available, but it is not through sort of unnecessary mental proliferation, but rather it may be coming through our intuition. And say, for example, when someone wants to have a good product, it is not that you being with the others and arguing with others and going through various books and putting your mind into a huge amount of information, and then you come out with the product. So that is also another approach that people are taking, that maybe we can say the common approach that people are taking. But on the other hand, sometimes what they do. So, I mean, assume that you went through kind of a brainstorming session, you couldn't come up with a solution, and you stop it, and you all go away. And all of a sudden, suppose you are having a tea with a very relaxed mood, and you take a break and you go for your lunch to a dinner, or you are simply resting on your bed, and your mind has given some sort of a rest. At that time, immediately you get a brilliant idea, because your mind has got that inherent skill. So we, in a way, have given overemphasis to thinking, and we think that all the mental proliferation is the only method available. But on the other hand, Buddha's teaching help us to see it in a different angle. So when mind is having its inner composure, when it has its own silence, so that also is quite potential, that also is quite fruitful, rich, to produce a kind of a very good decision, to take a very good decision, and to have a brilliant idea. So that is also there. We should not forget that. So therefore, I can't agree that all the creativity comes through proliferation. We can't agree on that, actually.
Thank you, Bhante. So for the next question, I'd like to invite Chitra.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me, Jennifer?
Yes, loud and clear.
Thank you. Last time I was having a problem with this computer. So Bhante, my question is that you said, or whether I misunderstood, I don't know, from our six senses, when we see, hear, and so forth, there is a kind of mental proliferation. Did you see that?
No. What I want to tell is that what we see, as I take an example, say I'm looking at a car. So this car is something already constructed. So assume it may be a single person or many people. So they thought about it, they designed it, and they come up with a design, and ultimately they produce something. And this is what we see. So it is not a kind of a very fundamental quality that we see. It is not an element characteristic what we see. Rather, what we see is a kind of a constructed or compact something. So it's a generated, or it's a product of mental proliferation. So when we see someone else's product of mental proliferation, it has a tendency to generate mental proliferation in ourselves as well. Because what we see is very conventional, very complex, and it has a lot of aspects included into it. As a result of that, our mind immediately triggers that inner quality of mental proliferation. Because what we see also is a product of mental proliferation, and now it triggers in ourselves further thinking. So that's what I want to share with you.
Now, when we see, for instance, something in nature like a tree or something like that, there hasn't been human mental proliferation into that, but we can still have mental proliferation by having daydreaming about it and having ideas about it. So that also, we can make our own mental proliferation. Would that be right?
Definitely. That is what mentioned in the Madhupindika Sutta. Say we take the very sort of very fundamental kind of an input, and on top of that we are adding our own likes and dislikes. We are doing a lot of constructions, and all our own interference is there. Then we do mental proliferation.
So you of course we have gone through all of this, in the sense you said we have to apply mindfulness first with effort, and then you also said doing the vipassana and having a silent mind, and also during daily life to have the contemplation. But does that mean that then if we do more meditation, we are going to be more in control of the mental proliferation? Would that be correct?
Yes, yes, definitely, yes.
So would that mean that people who don't meditate, regularly have more mental proliferation?
Yes, yes, why not?
So the remedy then, from what I'm hearing, is that we should we'll do silent contemplation and meditation to get over, to prevent this mental proliferation. That is ultimately the remedy.
Correct. You can say like that, because as Buddha mentioned, and Buddha actually give a very interesting verse, I mean, it's mentioned in the Dhammapada, and there he mentioned papancha bhirata paja nippa pancha tathagata. And he overlooks the whole realms, not only the humans, not only the gods, everywhere. And he see this inherent tendency in the minds of the people. Papancha bhirata paja. So they are delighted in mental proliferation. So they want to think, they want to proliferate. So they are fond of mental proliferation. So such a tendency is there among people. But the opposite is mentioned for the Buddha. Nippa pancha tathagata. So he is free from mental proliferation. So you can see the difference. So don't think that sometimes we probably take a wrong idea as in the previous question. So the mental proliferation avoids any kind of creativity. It is not. Now if you consider the Buddha's teaching, it has a lot of aesthetic aspects. It has a lot of philosophical aspects. It has a lot of rich, technical aspects. So many things are there. So he being free from mental proliferation, he was able to give a very beautiful interpretation to a very, important, significant liberation spiritual aspect. So that indicates what a kind of a potential he had. But he is free from mental proliferation. So we can understand. So he is showing us the path to come to the such kind of a level. I'm not telling that we have to become a Buddha, but the path is shown to overcome mental proliferation. And when the mind is in a such kind of an equipoise, so it also has the potential to come up with various creative ideas, to have a better solution, to give brilliant ideas. So such potential is there in the mind.
One of the other ladies who said, when you go deep into all of this, it is sometimes you have to be like a power apart from the general population. She said she has to pretend to be sad, and it goes makes it difficult to move in society sometimes. You know, Bhante?
Rather than telling pretending, can't we really feel another person's suffering?
Yeah, we can.
Exactly. So it is not that we are trying to become rude, or we are trying to become indifferent, we are trying to become insensitive. One can become sensitive, one can have a lot of compassion, empathy, and you can still have your sort of freedom of mind. So empathy is one aspect of the mindfulness practice. So when you are developing mindfulness, you have your own emotions. You can understand your own emotions. As a result of that, later, you can understand another person's emotions. And as a result of that, you develop a fair amount of empathy. So while being empathetic, you can actually help another person for him to have a kind of a person to share their sorrows. Because people nowadays don't have that time. I mean, they are quite busy. Assume that your friend is coming and they want to share something. I mean, they are going through some tragic situation and they want to share that with you. So at that time, we should have time. I mean, it is not that we are going to completely remove that their sorrow, but rather we have enough time to dedicate for them as a friend, as a practitioner. So then they are crying and they may be talking utter nonsense, but at least we have some time to listen to them. And actually that very, what you call the catharsis, that they are honest explanations. I mean, those may be foolish, but doesn't matter. That itself helps them to recover.
Yes, yes. Only sometimes, like, you know, the more you go into the Dhamma, you know, sometimes you have to step back from some of your associates who think differently and who want to go enjoy sensual pleasures and, you know, have a enjoy themselves, and so you have to step back from that company, you know, like you have to keep moving back sometimes, you know, and sometimes you have to be on your own, and sometimes it's a bit difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it has both aspects. I mean, you need to have your own seclusion to your own benefit and to strengthen your mind, and that is one aspect, true. But on the other hand, we have to be a part of the society. We have to have our relationship with others. And we have to be a good person. I mean, it doesn't mean that we are completely withdrawing from the society and being an utterly selfish person. Rather, the practice has to have kind of a balance. So you are having your inner strength to bear all these things. Now, when Buddha has established the Sangha society, now, he could actually be alone rather than establishing Sangha society. But when thousands and thousands of monks are coming to the order, so Buddha has to face so many questions. I mean, they have their own grievances. There are certain issues. So some are coming and complaining, some are coming and crying, and some are trying to disrobe. So Buddha was able to bear all these situations. So that indicates that maturity that Buddha had through his practice. So it is not only Buddha now, say for example, Venerable Sariputta, Venerable Moggallana. So likewise, there are such arahants. So they actually have their inner strength to maintain their stability at the same time to help others as well. I mean, I am not telling that we are arahants to do that into that level. But at least slowly to our capacity, we should have some helping hand rather than completely withdrawing from the whole situation.
Yes, Bhante. Yeah. We have to move with all the foolish people also. Otherwise, it's difficult.
Yes, yes. And because we were in the same situation, no? So, I mean, if someone else didn't listen to us, when I was a fool, if my teacher, if my, say, Kalyana Mittas didn't listen to me, how can I develop?
Yes.
Isn't it? So it is not that I am born enlightened, no. So I am a kind of a born fool. So at that time I have to talk to another person. So he has to compassionately listen to me, all my grievances, all my foolish ideas. Then he is talking to me, he is guiding me. So as a result of that, I am able to look at my own problems, issues and all my tendencies, and slowly I am sort of recovering. So likewise, so after we also have some skill developed, so we have to be another Kalyana Mitra to another person. Then only the sasana may thrive.
Exactly, Bhante. Yes,
yeah,
yes, yeah. That's good. Yeah, we have to still keep moving with everybody, but remain silent when it's necessary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, okay. I think we have come to the end of today's program. And thank you very much for your active participation. And by listening to Dhamma and participating in Dhamma discussion, we were able to accumulate some merits. So let's share these merits with reciting traditional verses. Ettavataca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavataca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata jamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha jabummattha deva naga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. ආකාසට්ඨාජ බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨාජ බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මං පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතේනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතේනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතේනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු